U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Georgia finishes its hand recount, but the Trump campaign's legal team is not backing down. Welcome. I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal, sitting in today for Paul Jugot. We're joined today by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kyle. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And as well to you, Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kyle. Happy Friday.
So the recount in Georgia finished, I believe, on Thursday night, and workers there examined 5 million ballots by hand. But the results seem pretty closely to match the machine count. At last check, President Trump was still behind Joe Biden by about 12,000 votes, a little more than that, which is down from about 14,000 votes or a little more last week, I believe. But many of the figures barely moved. The Georgia Secretary of State's office says that about 80% of Georgia's 159 counties, Kim, the hand count varied from the original machine count from 10 votes or fewer.
Right. And you know what? This is very much in keeping with prior recounts across the country. If things are done correctly, they don't tend to have major variations. You did see the numbers drop a little bit because there were a couple of counties that when they were looking through their canvas had realized that they had forgot in essence to upload or log certain votes. That is something that's why we have canvases. It's to catch things like that. But I think the importance of this is that for those who have made the argument that there was something awry or nefarious about the vote counting machines, the ballot machines, this kind of puts that to rest. And here's why, because the way this works is you go in, you vote on the machine. It tabulates your vote, but it also spits out a paper ballot, as it were, where you can check and ensure that the choices you made were correct. And they keep a copy of that ballot. And when they do the hand recount, that is what they are recounting, is those physical papers. So if the machines were simply changing votes over, there would have been a variation with those paper ballots. And as you were saying, there's very few differences between what the initial results showed and what the hand recount showed.
And the ballots that were found, it seems like all the reporting seems to be that was human error. I mean, in one county, there was a memory card that came out of a machine that they forgot to upload, or some ballots that they forgot to rescan. And that's sort of the downside. I mean, American elections are very distributed, and that offers some resiliency because they're not under any central authority. But the downside is you have all of these local officials in all these counties who are in charge of that, and that creates some messiness. But it seems to me that it's hard to fit this into any real sort of conspiracy theory, because some of these counties, Bill, were very red counties. And it seems to me that the story that they would have been hiding these ballots by accident doesn't really, or excuse me, they would be hiding these ballots intentionally, just doesn't really add up to me.
Yeah, and plus they didn't add up to the margin that was needed to overcome it. Look, all these things are things that might have happened, but so far there's no evidence that they did. They had the recount. I don't think anyone's implied that the recount was illegitimate or something. So I think that the Trump claims are kind of being diminished one by one. And I say that as someone that thought all those claims should be taken seriously, but we should also take seriously the results when we find it and see where the evidence leads us. And right now, it doesn't seem like there's much evidence to support the idea that the results should be overturned.
Well, one of the things that one of the arguments the Trump team is making about the recount is that it didn't re-verify signatures on absentee votes. And the difficulty there is that once you open the envelopes and take the ballots out, there's no way to match them all back up. And that's sort of, that's, you know, we have a secret ballot in this country. But one point of data that is a little bit useful in thinking about this, I think, is the rejection rate. And the Georgia Secretary of State's office says that the number of ballots that, or the rate of ballot rejection for signature issues this year was about 0.15%, Kim, which is pretty close, almost an exact match for the rejection rate in 2018.
Well, I guess two things on that. And I'd push back a little bit on the point about opening the ballots and the envelopes. The reality is that my understanding is that they keep those envelopes and you should have the same number of ballots as you have envelopes. And there's no reason you couldn't go back and re-verify the signatures. And any that did not match, you simply, you know, minus those votes, if that is the case. So there's a way to do it. And I don't really buy the kind of process argument that some of these election officials have put out there. That being said, is there a valid justification for doing that? Okay. There have been some claims by Trump campaign officials that they were not allowed reasonable access, meaning they were not allowed to be close enough to kind of watch that process go through. But those claims vary from state to state in different precincts where different things happened. You've also had some election officials point out that the process when this happens is not necessarily during the actual counting afterward, but beforehand. And, you know, the Trump campaign is going to have to convince a judge if they want to see that open. So far, and I think that this is important, they haven't presented good enough evidence to any judge yet that the process for checking those signatures was flawed. And you also, as you just mentioned, have some officials like those in Georgia noting that even, you know, that there are not a lot of basis for doing it, given that the rejection rates were similar to what they were in the past. So as with everything, if the Trump campaign wants to make this claim and claim that somehow there were mass numbers of mail-in votes that were accepted that should not have been, they're going to have to make a case to a judge and see if anybody buys it. And so far, they have not had success in that.
But I guess I agree with Kim here that the hand audit in Georgia really makes it difficult to believe the more sweeping claims coming out of the Trump legal team about the Dominion voting machines being hacked or rigged or messed up in some way. And this is part of what you heard, Bill, at the press conference on Thursday, led by Rudy Giuliani and the attorney Sidney Powell, who suggested that the Dominion machines run an algorithm that probably ran all over the country to take a certain percentage of votes from President Trump and flip them to President Biden.
Yeah, I don't know what the proof for that is. Look, I start out with, you know, a couple of things. It's been very murky, the charges and the counterclaims and so forth. But I start out, again, a candidate has the right to do this, anything legal and constitutional. So if the Trump administration wants to make these allegations, they can make them to the court and the court will then decide. So, I'm willing to let it play out. But by the same token, I think we have to understand, what's at stake here. I'm very concerned about the many of the 73 or 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump and do not think the election's legitimate. You know, I think that's a real concern that we should take seriously. However, there are how many millions more who voted for Joe Biden? And to have an election taken from him after, 2 weeks of being in the front in the counts, I mean, that would create an equal problem. The way I approach this is kind of like college football. When there's a touchdown pass and then they go to the videotape, they've ruled it a touchdown. And then the videotape's not quite sure. And maybe if you had to do it over again, you wouldn't have ruled it a touchdown. But the general rule is unless the evidence to overturn the ruling on the field is clear and unequivocal, the ruling on the field stands. And I feel that way about elections. The burden is higher to overturn results than to support results. And so far, I haven't seen all the evidence. I haven't seen all the affidavits that Rudy Giuliani presented, but what I've seen hasn't been persuasive that we're anywhere near close to that standard.
Hang tight, we'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. One last thought on the voting machines. I thought it was notable that the Georgia Secretary of State's office also put out a statement saying that they had asked a lab that is certified by the Election Assistance Commission to do a sort of audit of a random sample of the Dominion voting machines. And according to the statement by the Georgia Secretary of State, that also found no evidence of tampering. On the question of affidavits, which Bill brought up, I mean, that was one of the other big takeaways from the Thursday press conference for me is Rudy Giuliani citing these affidavits and saying, these are what real Americans are saying. This isn't me saying it. And let's give these people their day in court. But Kim, I think what's missing from that is some of these affidavits, at least, have already been in court and courts have found them unpersuasive.
That's absolutely true. We've had just this week a couple of judges dismiss lawsuits that were brought in which some of these claims were made. One out in Arizona, I believe one in Michigan. And that was one of the messages from the judges, which was that you had these affidavits and they do make these claims, but that they're very non-specific. They're not pointing to a specific moment or a specific ballot or a specific official. They're just sort of saying, well, you know, I saw some boxes and they weren't secured, for instance. That doesn't prove that anything bad or nefarious happened. It does point to potentially some irregularities. But as the judges have made the case again and again, they've sort of said, you know, you need to sort of provide these witness testimonies of observers, many of them, need to provide a specific instance and a specific time or place in which actual fraud took place. And that has not actually really happened, or at least not to a level that has convinced any judge yet.
And just to underline that, so one of the names that Rudy Giuliani cited specifically in that Thursday press conference is a Michigan poll worker reportedly named Jesse Jacob. And I'll read just a little bit of a ruling from a Michigan state judge on November 13th. And the ruling addresses some other affidavits as well. But here's what the judge said specifically. Ms. Jacob's information is generalized. It asserts behavior with no date, location, frequency, or names of employees, unquote. The judge also said that she came forward only after Biden had won the election, had won Michigan, and that she did not include any information about whether she raised concerns or tried to report the alleged mishandling of ballots beforehand. And some of this, it seems to me, and this is what the judge says, stems from non-experts who are, you know, observers or workers and are seeing something they think is suspicious, but it's really not. And one example that the judge cites specifically is this Michigan poll worker says, I was at the counting place and the workers were not checking signatures. And what the judge says is, you know, under Michigan law, that happens earlier in the process, Bill. That happens before the ballots get to the counting location. And so essentially that's a baseless claim.
Yeah. I mean, this is why my view has always been let it work out. It'll go through the courts. I don't think the courts are going to take away an election on flimsy evidence. And that's what we've seen. I think it's all going to go through the courts pretty quickly. And then it'll be much harder to make the argument that Donald Trump was defrauded of an election. So I think these, I don't know how many cases are left, but I think it's going to be handled pretty rapidly. And in the next week or so, I think there's not going to be anything left.
So, I mean, is what's going on here, is a lot of it, Kim, do you think, is it an argument to the public? Is it political theater. I mean, it seems to me if the Trump campaign had found solid evidence of massive wrongdoing, enough to overturn thousands or tens of thousands of ballots in multiple states, which is what they would need in order to flip the Electoral College, that evidence would be taken to court by a staid practicing attorney. And instead, what we have is press conferences.
Look, I think it's frustration because here's what no one is really saying. Okay. I think there's a dawning realization, and I think it hit many people early as the results came in and as these mail-in ballots were counted in the days following the election, and Donald Trump's lead continued in some of these states, continued to go away, and Joe Biden overtook him and won. That the Republicans got out hustled well before Election Day even happened. You know, and I keep pointing this out to everyone again and again, which is, why do Democrats care so much about this election reform bill that Nancy Pelosi introduced last year? Why have they been so insistent on mail-in voting and looser registration requirements and allowing ballot harvesting in the states? It's because it's an operation that they have been fine-tuning for many years now. And, you know, they went to court. There were dozens upon dozens of lawsuits filed by Democrats across the country to water down the kind of campaign, the voting rules, because it allowed them to engage in kind of rev up the Democratic machine and have paid volunteers out there registering people by, you know, long lines of them and scooping up their ballots and collecting them, and sending them back. And that's how they won this election. And so what the word is, I mean, I think the word that no one's using is there's a sense of Republicans that was not fair and somehow. But the problem is it was the rules. And they did fight them and they won some and they lost some. But I think one of the problems now in focusing on these theories, other theories, including voting machines and foreign influence, which was another thing that was brought up by the Trump lawyers this week, is that it's taking everybody's eyes off the ball. You know, we got Georgia Senate races coming up. That same mail-in system is going to be used. You know, if Republicans want to make sure that elections have more integrity in the future, they should be focusing on these voting regimes out there and making sure that we do have sound ways of a level playing field in terms of voting operations.
That seems to me a fair point. And given the huge expansion of mail voting in a lot of these states that happened for 2020, Bill, it seems to me that lawmakers, state legislatures are going to be fighting over for the next 2 years about how much of that to keep, how much of that to roll back, what the exact parameters, what went wrong in 2020, what went right in 2020. And there's going to be a lot of battles there to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think I'm not sure that how the election went down would have changed so much. But if the Supreme Court, for example, in Pennsylvania had upheld what the state legislature said about the rules of the election, we might have the same results, but without the acrimony and suspicion. I really do think we have to get back to the fundamentals, you know, what the Constitution leaves it to state legislatures to set a lot of these rules. And I think, as we pointed out, you know, long before we knew who would win the election, that it was bound to increase bitterness and suspicion because of the way rules had been changed at the last minute and seemed arbitrary and deadlines extended. So I'm hoping we can do better next time. And also, we'd have to add that the perfect storm of COVID made some of these exceptions possible where they wouldn't have been otherwise.
So Kim, I mean, where do you think we go from here? I mean, we now have two counties in Wisconsin that are doing a recount, and there was some controversy in Michigan earlier this week about county certification in Wayne County. What's the story there, and where do things go from now?
Well, the story on Wayne County, and a lot of people have seen it now, is that at the county level, two of the Republicans on a four-person commission for two Democrats and two Republicans. They weren't going to certify because there were some variations in the numbers. Then they did certify. They have now backtracked and said they want to rescind their certification. It's not clear that there is a legal pathway for them to do that. They are apparently coming at the invitation of the White House to meet with President Trump. We'll see where that goes. But I think what's notable here, look, we're coming to an end of a period at which states are under great pressure now to certify because they have got to hit some deadlines. And so this coming week, as Bill alluded to, is going to be kind of a critical week because remember, you can't just do this in one state either. That's the really tough task that the Trump campaign is facing, is it you have to change the outcome in a combination of states to get to the number of electoral votes that you need to deny Joe Biden an outright victory. So Michigan and Wisconsin are big places. You know, Wisconsin, there's about a $20,000 vote difference. They are doing recounts in two of the biggest counties, Dane and Milwaukee. In the past, those hand recounts in Wisconsin have not changed votes by more than a few hundred at most. And so there's that. And then in Michigan, the numbers between Trump and Biden are more than 100,000 votes. So you'd have to have some major, major court victory that allowed you to disqualify hundreds of thousands of votes. That seems a big stretch. But, you know, we're going to get some, as Bill said, final clarification here because deadlines are coming and we'll see how this plays out.
But there's starting to be some talk that the intent of the Trump legal team here is to delay, to push those certification deadlines, and then Trump can make an argument to these state legislatures, Republican state legislatures in a state like Michigan, that the vote was so messed up that the state legislature should take back control of appointing electors and appoint the electors itself. Sort of overriding the popular vote in that state. I mean, Bill, do you see any prospect of that at all?
No. Look, I think you can make a constitutional argument that state legislatures have the right to do this. I think there's an argument for that. But that is a bigger step than even, you know, demanding a recount and having an investigation into the vote. And I just don't think anyone's going to do it even if they called for it. So I think, again, if it looks remote now, the idea of having all these results come in, having recounts and, you know, investigations into it and all that still confirms that Joe Biden won the election on Election Day. The idea that a state legislature is going to overturn that, I think that's preposterous. I don't think it's going to happen.
And I think, Kim, that if that were to happen, even in one state, even if it's not enough to overturn the Electoral College, I feel like that would be met by pretty widespread fury on the left, in the center, and a good chunk of the right.
Yeah, and it's in part because, look, as Bill said, you can make the argument that there's an interesting civic or legal or constitutional argument about the role of state legislatures and electors. But just because you can make the case that they have a role doesn't mean that it's a good idea to do it, because the only argument for doing it would be if you had indeed shown some sort of widespread nefarious voting irregularity that had not been remedied or had not been rooted out in a recount or an audit, but that was still so obvious that you couldn't ignore it, you know, like say some sort of corrupt election official and there was clear evidence that they had done something inappropriate. You know, maybe if you could do that in like one state, but to argue that just because you don't like the election results in five different states that now you're going to just go get the electors to come in and call a different conclusion. No, that obviously would make people a lot of very angry and would also set just a very worrisome precedent for how elections are held in the future. Americans want to know that their vote matters. They go out, they go through this process, they consider it their civic duty. We have a very, very, you know, laid out process for how this actually happens. And two, in the late stage game, suddenly say, okay, we're not going to do it that way anymore. No, there would be, I think, a real pushback across, as you said, many different sectors of the political realm.
So then let's bring up one final thought here, which is, I mean, is there a risk that if this controversy continues of splitting the Republican Party? I mean, do Republicans risk going into those Georgia Senate runoffs in January, which are going to decide whether the Senate is controlled by Republicans still or whether Democrats have unified control of Washington, which will decide, I mean, a lot of what the next 2-4 years looks like. I mean, is there a risk of splitting the GOP here, Bill?
Yes, I think there's a big risk. I mean, again, I think my own view is that it's going to be settled fairly quickly, that it's not going to drag out for a month. It's going to it's going to come pretty quickly, but certainly by the time the states, I think, make officially cast their electoral votes. And I'm hoping that after that happens, I don't think that even if Donald Trump continue to make the claim after that, I think each day he loses more and more supporters. But as you say, that could be enough to divide the party. I'm hoping the party focuses on Georgia because it's really important now, given what Joe Biden and the other Democrats are proposing to do. And it's our only help for restoring some perspective and sanity in Washington. And I'm hoping that sober minds see that when the Trump issue has receded and we see what's really at stake and we get more of an idea of who Joe Biden is appointing and what policies he intends to pursue.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.